You know what's weird is that I've been having difficulty processing the whole seasons thing in the last couple months because we really had a weird spring, an odder summer, and an even odder fall. So the last three seasons have been very, very strange. It's like it's either hot or cold. It's either very sunny or just tons and tons of rain, precipitation. So anyway, that's our situation here in New York. And in Florida, last few hours of the recount. Drum roll, who's going to be the next governor? Three races up at stake. Can you believe this? And I think the reality is, if it comes within 25%, I may have the percentage wrong on that, but it would have to go to a hand count. It's still a machine count right now. And also, the machines that are recounting are overheating. I mean, you cannot make this material up. Only in Florida. I feel like it's just such a state that's just rife with just corruption. And I mean, come on, it's 2018 and we're having issues like this in one of the richest countries in the world, and we can't even get our votes counted properly. Oh man, are you a flu shot person? You know, I used to be. And then I don't know. I guess I was just reading some stuff. I'm like, you know what? Let me just not get a flu shot this year. So I didn't. And that was a couple years ago. And my wife would get one and she would get sick and I didn't, or vice versa. So I didn't find it to be any rhyme or reason in terms of the actual effectiveness of the flu shot. As you know, it's a gamble. They're actually just kind of guessing on what bacteria will be prominent and what vaccine will work, et cetera, and what will be kind of, the influenza of the season. And actually, I just ran into somebody the other day who told me that their friend who we had met through years ago died from a common cold. They had actually a transplant. I forget actually what kind of transplant, a major organ, and a common cold killed them. And I was just so bummed out for that person. I mean, we do hear about that once in a while, that a cold can take somebody out. But man, it's really, really hard to believe. So this week, if you remember actually in the springtime, I coached two soccer teams, my daughters and my sons. And my son's team was undefeated and they were really good. And, I spoke about it a few times on the show here, and I attributed it to a few things. Number one, their skill set, their drive, their initiative, their determination, all that jazz. And then I also said that I would give them very motivating, empowering talks and really, so all these different variables would come together. And I was thinking, well, this is the combination. These are all the parts of, a winning team. And it worked. It really worked. Well, that was last season. So this season, it's been very trying, to say the least. Number one, the first three or four weeks of practice didn't happen because of, going back to the weather, because of the just weather patterns that were just very, very unforgiving this past fall, as you know. No matter where you are, probably in the U.S., the weather patterns have been quite off. So that started us out of the gate in a not very successful manner. So we lost a few games coming out of the gate, and I saw that we had some talent. I realized we garnished some good players, and it's all luck of the draw. All players are kind of rated. As a coach, you have to rate each player, and it can change throughout the season, but they use that in terms of the process of recruitment, in terms of the organizers of the league. And you wouldn't put five excellent players on a team. You put maybe two or three excellent players on a team. Then you do the mediocre players and sprinkle in some, need much growth players on a team as well. So you get a good balance of skill sets. So anyway, I was looking around at the team, realizing that, we do have a lot of potential. So, and that potential comes together when? At practices. So practice is always key for any field or any trade that you're in. Skill set, being on the radio, being an accountant, whatever the case may be. And so The problem there after the weather issue was some kids weren't showing up to practice, actually only a third of the team. And considering that two coaches, myself and another coach, have each a player on the team, that's only about three other players that are representing the team. So needless to say, practices were actually very, very effective because I run them well. I run them fun. First of all, my mantra is, guys, let's have some fun. We'll have fun as long as you're good listeners and don't disrespect me. I'm not out there to waste my time. And, you know, I said you can do that before practice and after practice, and we'll have good fun. But if I'm out there and you're not listening and you're goofing around, you know, you're going to run. So this is the beauty of these kids getting older right now, is that when they are lacking discipline or they get penalties during the game. And listen, I'm not like a staunch, like very, very strict coach. Like if you make a mistake, you make a mistake. But if you make a mistake out of ignorance or you don't care, or you just didn't put any effort into it, then you're going to get in trouble. So, and I say it with a smile. I'm like, okay, there's the woods are like a football field away from where we practice. I'm like, okay, hit the woods, and they have to sprint to the woods and back. And if they lollygag or dog it, I make them do it again. Anyway, so there we are at practice, and it would come together, the cohesiveness. But anyway, you only have five or so players during a given practice. So flash forward to a game situation, and we would have two or three kids that would be on travel team. I'm sure you're familiar with the travel scenario. It's a league that usually has better skilled players than a rec league, recreational league. So, and that's fine. I understand that players want to do the travel league. But the reality is they can't make our practice, and that's kind of a bummer. And there's a little bit of a, I don't know, air of like a right or privilege that, you know, oh, I'm in travel, whatever, that's fine, whatever. But if you're not good and you can't toe the line, then it's an issue. Or you feel like, oh, I don't need to practice because I'm in travel. So all these different variables were working against the team's forward advancement. So the reality is we won one single game. I went from being undefeated to winning one game and tying one other game and losing eight games. So, man, what a blow. What a blow to the ego, a blow to every kid on the team. So I saw this happening slowly, like they were disenfranchised, disenchanted, you name it, dis everything. And I tried to, you know, provide some insight by saying, hey, listen, guys, no problem. We have the skill set. That's the biggest thing, is if you don't have the skills and the talents, that's hard to cultivate that quickly over, you know, a 10-week season. So I said, the easy thing is we just have to get it together, you know, offensively, defensively, et cetera. We had some good goalies. We had some good strikers. We had what it took. But you know what happened? I feel two things. Number one, the practice issue is these kids are 9 years old, so they can't drive themselves to practice. So it's the parents that obviously are the taxi cabs. They're the built-in Uber or Lyft component to the soccer team in the family. So if you as a parent, or they as a parent, don't commit, you know, first of all, it's a bad reflection on following through as a parent. So I would send out an email. You know, I send out a lot of emails just as, because I know a lot of coaches don't. I just rather over-communicate than under-communicate. Hey, how you doing? It's Coach Mark. Very psyched for this game this Friday. You know, please arrive 15 minutes early so we can practice, warm up, make sure they're well hydrated, fed, et cetera. All the common sense issues that you would think you'd present. And I'd say, please let me know. Please let me know if your kid is not attending. Excuse me. And of course, I'd get maybe one email, but I'd be down like four or five players. I mean, that's a lot. So sometimes, some games, we'd be at the bare minimum, just enough members, players to cover the field, or we'd be down one, or just have one extra. So one sub for 10 players. You know, that's a lot for this nine, especially on the conditions if it gets warm or cold even. So anyway, it was very frustrating because I felt like the parents either stopped caring, or they listen to their kids saying, you know what, we're on a losing team, and this is not something I signed up for, so I don't want to practice. And you know what, if something else came up on game day. You know what? I'd rather do that than go to the soccer field and lose. So that, I think, is very, very frustrating for a kid. But I feel very strongly about this, that it's the parent's responsibility to say, listen, you're part of a team, a vital component. You signed up, and as part of a team, you have to pull your weight. That's going to practice. And believe me, I understand schedules, conflicts, et cetera. Totally understand. I wrote that to people, the parents, and said, listen, I understand things happen. Do what you have to do. But just remember that soccer practice is where it all comes together. Then we can demonstrate it on game day. So I feel, again, that a lot fell through the cracks, and I sent an email out right before the final game saying to parents, please, please, please try to invigorate your son or daughter, because it is a co-ed team. There's one girl on the team. And realize, let them know how important a team effort is, about resiliency, commitment, and following through. Regardless whether you have, you know, the win column is outshining the loss column or tie column. So, but anyway, so the last game was last Friday night, and we won 5-1. So it was a great game. This was the game I thought we had in us every game of the season. So it was a very, very powerful conclusion to kind of a very long, drawn out season, to say the least. And when we, what I do sometimes also is I invite the parents over when I do a talk at the end of a practice or a game, which I did in this particular case, last game of the season. I called them all over and said, this is the game that you are capable of having all season long. This is the game and the platform where you were able to shine, execute your skill set, show your talents, prove to yourself, prove to your teammates, prove to your family and the league how good you are. I said, I don't care if you shoot that goal, shoot at the goal, and it goes over to the left or to the right of it. Just shoot. Just pass. Just work as a team. It'll come together. Just listen to me and the other coach, and we'll formulate ways to make it work. And it worked. And I was very, very happy that they could finally see the fruition of their hard work. Because, you know, hey, for anybody, let alone a kid, you know, if you work at something and you don't see positive rewards or outcomes, you know, yeah, it gets daunting. You get frustrated. You get, you know, like, oh, my God, I don't want to do this type of thing. And that's totally understandable, totally understandable. But I was glad, really, really happy to see, elated. I think I was happier than all the kids combined that we got a big win. And there was actually two or three other games where we were extremely close. One of the games I wasn't there for, I had a work conflict. And they we got scored on like in the last few seconds of the game. And you know what was really special about last week's game was within the last minute, my son, who's on the team, had a breakaway, and he's about in midfield, and he's trucking, he's rolling down that field, and he beats out two other defenders, and now he's got a one-on-one with the goalie. And I'm like, oh my God, no, no, no. This is like, it's harrowing to watch, right? I'm like, go, go, go. And all of a sudden that goalie comes out, because they should come out, because you want to close the distance between the striker, the ball, the striker, and the goalie. And that's what he did. And my son just, you know, released, wham, kicked it and flew right past him and got a goal. So I was happy for him. He was even disenchanted. Now, as the coach of a player who's on the team, he would be like, Dad, I'm not going. I don't want to play. And this became a little bit of a contentious situation throughout the season. I would say, Luke, you should be the shining example. And I know it's hard for a kid, but I said to him, you have to be the shining example of fortitude and not giving up. And regardless of if you score a goal in a game or not, you should leave it all on the field. You got to leave it all on the field, right? So I had my own internal battle with myself, my battle with my son, and battle with the team and team parents. So, man, it was a very, very grueling, grueling season. My wife was like, are you not having a good time this season? I'm like, you know what? I'm really looking forward to game number 10. So game number 10 came and went, and actually this weekend they have trophy day, which is kind of a cool thing. where all the teams get together and get trophies and have a bit of a party. So all in all, it was a great learning experience, I think, for everybody. I hope the parents really walk away with something that they learn and instill into their kids, because certainly I'm not for all these, you know, leagues that give everyone a trophy regardless of what place they come in. I think it should be earned. Maybe when they're young, when they're 5 years of age, younger, yes, that's fine. Everyone gets a trophy. But it's not reflective of real life. There are winners. There are losers. There are middle of the packers. Middle of the packers, I think that's a great expression. That is an expression where, like, possibly like an example is like maybe like the bulk of the workplace is like in the middle of the packers. People who do just enough to get by, they don't really excel in a great way in their position or in their field, but they do what they need to do. So do you want to be a middle of the packer? No, I should say not, right? So anyway, lesson learned. Hopefully, and so spring is, they have these seasons twice a year, spring and fall. So I said to my son last night in the car, I said, hey, would you be into playing this season, this spring? And he's like, I said, I know it's early. It's not even, you know, Christmas yet. He goes, well, let me think about it. I said, well, I hope you do, because I can't imagine coaching a team without you. And there's some things I would do differently in the early part of a season. In terms of actually talking to the parents, I think I would actually have a meeting, just a sideline, very casual meeting at a practice with the parents, and let them know what I expect of them. And this is not in a like, I expect you. No, this is just like, listen, if you want your kid to excel, to get better skilled at soccer, whether it's defense, offense, whatever, or just an overall life lesson, please, please make every effort to come to practice, because that is where it happens. 17 minutes after the hour of 11 a.m., my name is Mark Farrell. The show's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. If you are by a computer, if you have your smartphone in your hand, check out Facebook. You can watch us on Facebook on the Progressive Radio Network channel. And I want to tell you about a great event I was part of the other night, Monday night, the 13th annual Laugh for Sight. Laugh for Sight is a great, great fundraising event for degenerative retinal diseases like Stargardt's, macular degeneration, and retinitis pigmentosa. And my degenerative retinal disease is called retinoschisis. That's under the umbrella of degenerative retinal diseases, but not one of the ones, unfortunately, that gets all the funding. Anyway, it was a great, great night. It was actually 13 years ago the first event was held, and I was there, and I cannot believe it. I keep saying every year that we hope it's the last year that we have this. But it's a great, great event. It's a critical and vital fundraising event for the Sheen Institute, which is a low vision research foundation. The headliner was Robert Klein, and has been a headliner for 13 years, which is pretty amazing. Jim Gaffigan was one of the surprise comedians, and a host of other comedians, which were just really great. I love how we can come together on any front, because I'm like a person who so self-deprecating, and I make fun of everybody, every race, every nationality, everybody, and myself included, because I think obviously with sensitivity and obviously the appropriateness depending on the atmosphere and where you are, but comedy is a great way to level the playing field, especially, you know, one comedian, and I cannot believe I didn't pick up on this, comedian comes up on stage and goes, that's a really nice Laugh for Sight sign. I wonder how many people can read this thing here. I mean, just like very dry humor, almost like Stephen Wright humor. But it was a very, very successful event. And Brian Fisher is the founder, and he's a comedian, and he's blind and has a guide dog, Nash, and he performs every year, and his act is great. His routine has gotten so much better than it was 13 years ago. He's doing extremely well. Great material, executes very well, and just a great guy. And just a pioneer for launching something so vital for people with blindness and visual impairments that have a foothold in this community to garnish the attention, the education, the awareness for other people. And to also to have a fun, just a simple fun event so you can raise money. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's just, hey, we want to get together and laugh as well. So if I have had the pleasure of kind of sewing all this together in the past 13 years. And it's just been so much fun. So I really kind of get a chance to, number one, get on a stage, a legendary stage like Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. New York City, the comedy capital of the world, capital of so many things of the world. And get up there and, you know, once a year be a comedian. And, you know, sometimes, I should say most years, I prepare some material. This particular year, I just was too busy leading up to it. So on the way in, my wife's like, you want me to drive so you can, you know, prepare more? I'm like, oh, you know, I got some material upstairs, my Pentium, in my head that I'm interested in executing. And so I would go up there, and as a job, my job as a host is to obviously execute house cleaning information. You know, we're doing a silent auction. And as a matter of fact, one of the said is, do you think they have silent auctions at events for the deaf and hearing impaired community? I mean, what a kind of ridiculous name, silent auction. It's kind of funny anyway. I'll obviously, when you have a when you're hosting a show, radio show, solo, and you even tell a joke, even if it's really funny, there's no feedback. It's just me. I'm the only feedback. I have to like react to my own material. So being the host of a solo show is hard on many fronts and levels. Anyway, so I got a piece of video here for you that we're going to roll. If you are on Facebook, again, it's the Progressive Radio Network channel. If not, obviously you can listen to the audio. You don't need to see me because there's nothing much to see. But actually, somebody actually posted on Facebook today, Jim Carrey. And I get that probably 5 to 10 times a week. Not the Jim Carrey that's in the Just Kidding show with the long hair, more of the slick back hair. Anyway, so here's about 3 or 4 minutes of the material that I did on one particular time I got up on stage. The audio is a little low and it's a little hard to hear, but just turn up and hope you enjoy on PRN.
Thank you, Ryan, and Grandstand Sports. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 2018's 18th, make that 13th edition of Laugh for Sight. Thank you very much.
Yeah!
You guys have got a lot of choices, a lot of commitments to make. You can be a lot of other places, but you chose to be here tonight, so thank you very, very much. On behalf of the founder and trailblazer and comedian, Brian Fischler, thank you. Before we bring out the host, the real host, and the comedians that'll really make you laugh, that a few years ago I had the privilege of being part of the mayor's office for people with disabilities, Disability Mentoring Day. And it was very, very pivotal for me on many levels because, number one, I'm a person with a disability, visual impairment, in New York City radio, and I've never let anything stop me because of my disability. But more importantly, I was able to have a platform for kids, for students, for aspiring DJs, creative directors, on-air hosts, writers, news anchors, to have a crack at radio. And one of them, by coincidence, is here today. Victor, please stand up. Big hand for Victor. Victor seized the opportunity and spent about 8 hours in my studio and has emailed me every freaking day since. Mark, any openings? No, Victor, not in the last 5 minutes. Mark, how about now? No, sorry, Victor. Victor, I hate to tell you this, but my email server is going to be down for the next 6 months. I love your fortitude, my friend. And just so you know, people with disabilities are the most reliable employees on staff everywhere. They are so thankful to be employed. They are so thankful to be able to show and prove day to day how talented and how devoted they are. So big hand and a big applause for them.
Woo! Yeah!
A little bit of house cleaning. Case in point. Sir, I'm sorry. Mine?
Whoa.
I'll get back to you. Dude, this phone is how old? This phone is probably 4 or 5 years old. Haven't got a raise, pal? So none of this during the show. None of this.
None of this. None of that.
Okay? No flash photography. No recording. We encourage, not only encourage, but we welcome flirting, heckling to a certain degree. Just watch out for the pooches. There's a lot of pooches here. A lot of guide dogs that are actually on duty. If you have a flask and you want to do the right thing, give a little something underneath the table. more liquor, a little liquor. Open bar is always for the working dogs, right? That's okay, I'm sure. But when you stretch out, when you go to the bathroom during a comics act, just look down, certainly if you're visually impaired, but just watch out for the dogs because we have about 15, 20 dogs here tonight. And that's a great thing. So a big round of applause for the people and the animals that allow us to get around here. I hope we're not here for the next year, for the 14th annual, but as a person with a visual impairment, we do everything possible to raise critical funds for degenerative retinal diseases, macular degeneration, Stargardt's, RP, blepharoptosis, $1 at a time, one laugh at a time, one comedian at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, you know from MTV, VH1, and a plethora of other media outlets, raise your hands, raise your glasses, raise your spirits for Brian McCarthy!
And that's Laugh for Sight 2018. So thank you, Jesse, for taking care of that video. Had a little bit of a technical issue. You know, when you get some long footage on your phone, sometimes it's hard to upload it. And anyway, our crack Jesse, crack. Our wizard of technology, Jesse, took care of it. Thank you, Jesse. So that's a little bit of a taste of the night, and of also the comedians were coming up after that, one at a time. Robert Klein, Jim Gaffigan, who's really, really funny. And I did a bit on a few different bits on different things that I think are just relatable. I use my visual impairment as great humor. One of them was yoga, though. I was saying to the audience that, you know, I love yoga. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago that I started doing yoga and it's great. I feel release and it's great for strength. It's great for calmness and all these other great aspects. But I said to people during this skit, I said, I leave there so filled with anxiety because for that whole goddamn 60 minutes, I'm trying to do one thing and one thing only, not pass gas. Because here we are in these anatomical positions where every orifice of your body is completely wide open and in positions where the body doesn't seem like it's meant to be. And, you know, gas is just dying. This naturally wanted to purge. And all I'm doing is trying to hold that sphincter so tight like I'm trying to hold like a walnut. Well, who holds a walnut in a sphincter? I don't know. But anyway, you got the visual. No, don't get a visual. But that's the case. What I was saying is that it's so friggin' hard not to pass gas in yoga. That's what I'm saying. And I actually compliment people when they pass gas because that means you're totally relaxed. Can you imagine being in yoga class and someone say, oh, well done, Mark. Well done. Great flatulence. Yes, great flatulence. So I was saying that. And I'm like, by the end of the class, by the time I leave, I'm full of anxiety because I've been holding my breath. Speak about breathing deep breaths. No, I can't do deep breaths because I'm so afraid of shit myself and also farting. So that was my yoga bit. It was a little bit more involved, a little bit more embellishment, and a little bit more colorful in execution as well. I also spoke about being in radio and how when I meet people, when they say, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm in radio. And they're like, oh, yeah, I don't listen to radio anymore. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, you're the one. You're the one who doesn't listen. Like, you know, pal, okay, if you don't listen to radio, that's fine because there are millions upon millions upon millions of people who do. And terrestrial radio will never go out of fashion, just like internet radio will never go out of fashion. It's free. It's ubiquitous. People love it. They love the timeliness. They love the rich content. They love the connectivity, the personal aspect of radio, whether it's internet or terrestrial. So I was going on about that, and they're like, oh, yeah. Well, you know, I had a college radio station. Well, good for you. So you got laid when you're in college. Now I get laid and I get paid. Well, no, I don't get laid. Well, you know, I have a wife and kids and a mortgage and stuff. I kind of get laid, but not like I used to get laid when I was single in radio and things were really, you know, pouring money and all that jazz. But and the other thing was interesting is that I mentioned to people that, you know, as a motivational speaker, it's a great field to be in. And I don't like the moniker motivational speaker. It's kind of, I don't know, it's cliche, it's corny, it's not really something I like, but you know what, when you say it, people understand what you do, who you are, but I tell people that motivational speaker sums it up nicely because this other appropriate summing up of being a motivational speaker is too long, like get off your ass, grow up, get motivated, do something with your life, and stop complaining and bitching right about now. Is that too long in a business card? Yeah, I think that's too long for a business card. So motivational speaker is a little bit more succinct and rolls off the tongue easier than what I just mentioned. But it's funny, the other day, I'm walking to my mailbox. This is the day of the comedy show, last Monday. I'm going out to get the mail before I get in the car to drive into the city. And an old neighbor drove up to me. Mark, how you doing? This is from my previous neighborhood. And she was coming by to visit somebody. And she's like, oh, great. Are you still a motivational speaker? I'm like, yeah. She's like, oh, that's so great. You know, I want you to come. She works for the state of New Jersey. I want you to come speak to employees of the state. We're having a conference. I'm like, oh, great. Then she's like, you know what? You have a minute? I'm like, kind of. What's up? She's like, you know, I've been thinking about becoming a motivational speaker. I'm like, oh, here we go. Another person who says, you know what? I want to be a motivational speaker. If I had a dollar for every time I heard that, or people who say to me, you know, people tell me I have a great voice. Not me, the people who are telling me this. And I should do radio ads or commercials. I'm like, oh, well, go for it. Because you know what? Anybody who wants to be in radio can just snap their fingers and be in radio. Yeah, that's how it works. Exactly. You want to be on TV ads? Do voiceover? Sure. Just go in and try out. I'm sure you'll get the gig. That is far from reality. That is not how it works. Yes, if you have good pipes, you have, you know, an advantage. If you have a unique sounding voice, etc. So anyway, here I am going to get my mail. This woman who I haven't seen in a couple of years stops and says, oh my God, it's great to see you. I want to be a motivational speaker. How can I do it? So we're talking, and then she said to me, wait a minute. Don't you talk about suicide? I think you told me a while ago. I said, yes, I do. My brother died by suicide. I went through my own, you know, panic attacks, anxiety, depression and stuff. And she's like, oh, okay. Well, and you talk about it? I'm like, yes. That's one of the things I talk about, mental health, overcoming adversity, all that stuff. And she's like, you know, I don't know if this is too much to unload, but, and she starts telling me about her, you know, dark days. And believe me, totally understand, relate. But here I am. I'm out going to my mailbox, man. All I want to do is get what's coming to me, what the government is sending me, the great postal service. I just want to get my junk mail. Maybe a bill. At this point, a bill is looking really good instead of talking to this woman who I haven't seen in years, who's telling me on the curb while her car is running and her door is open that she's going through dark days and she wants to be a motivational speaker. Ay. So here I am on the curb. Mailbox is open, but I can't retrieve my mail because she's talking about her dark days. So here I am. So I do this shtick on stage at Gotham Comedy Club during Laugh for Sight, because I'm thinking this is material right here in the making. And that's what I love about comedy. That's what I love about this talk show. That's why I love being on stage, because everything I talk about and do is based on my life, or perception of my life, or the surroundings of my life, the environment. And that's what makes me, I think, connect with people. And other people, believe me, are better at it, far better at it than I am. But this is why I love doing what I do, because it allows me to really connect with people, to allow people to see that I'm vulnerable, etc. So here I am up on stage, and this woman's still telling me about her dark days and how things were not good. And she didn't actually, you know, think about suicide. She didn't think about it. Of course, she probably thought about it, because that's how the brain chemistry works. And there's no reason to be ashamed of it. So I'm up on stage doing this whole shtick, and it goes on for a few minutes. But the reality was, it was very funny. It was just how all this stuff could have happened to me on the day of Laugh for Sight 2018 at Gotham Comedy Club. And excuse me. It was a good time had by all. And I didn't mean to make fun of. Yes, I did mean to make fun of the person who was stopping me as I was getting mail. And who would have thought something, you know, so inane, so, you know, pedestrian would be catch you off guard like that and be like, oh, my God, I'm just mere feet from my house. And I just wish I was on the other side of my door. Anyway, Laugh for Sight. Check it out. Laugh4sight.com. Laughforsight.com. Always taking donations. Brian Fisher is a phenomenal man. And as a matter of fact, there's one little thing I did quickly, which won't translate here well unless you're watching on Facebook, which I will not give the audio description of what I'm doing. So if you're on Facebook Live, you can see me. So people say to me, how did Brian lose his vision? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't really like to talk about his personal aspects of how his vision was, you know, lost and declined and all that. But he did, you know, he did a lot of things that weren't really good for him. So I'm not at I can't disclose exactly how he did it. So if you're on Facebook Live, exactly, you can see how I disclosed how he lost his vision. Anyway, 35 minutes past the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for checking out Insights on the Progressive Radio Network. If you missed any past shows or like to replay, loop all the shows, man. Post them on your Facebook, whatever social media platform you're on. Go on to prn.fm and check out Insights on any show. And feel free to listen to your heart's desire. So I want to talk about Hard Rock Hotel. You've heard about the Hard Rock brand. There's a new hotel in Atlantic City. I went there last weekend. It was a joint business and just a two-day getaway with my family. And I just wanted to mention this to you because it was an incredible, incredible event and hotel and stay. I'm not one of these people who loves going to, theme hotels or theme experiences, kind of like Disney World, things of that nature. But it's kind of in my backyard. It's an hour and change away. And it's local. It's new. It's rock and roll. I also work at a rock station. I love rock and roll. It pulsates through my veins. So I figured, hey, what the heck? And I heard many, many good things about it. Well, let me tell you. The hotel was amazing. I've been up since 4:30 this morning. Sorry about that. Hard Rock Hotel was phenomenal. Was much more than I ever expected. For example, coming out of the parking garage, you're immediately ensconced with music. And not only music, like great music, and also the sound. I'm a sound kind of snob. Like the audio systems and sonically, they were just awesome, awesome. So you're walking down a hallway. Immediately, you see memorabilia from Lady Gaga, Pink, Dean Martin. I mean, runs the gamut. Rock stars, pop stars, some blues legends. Unbelievable. Then you get to an escalator going down. And as you're going down, you immediately see you're struck with this incredible screen. It's probably about 360 degrees, except for the part where the escalator cuts through. And it's a giant screen, and it's all live video footage of an incredible concert. And throughout my two-day stay, I mean, I would actually make it a point to pass this area because I was always interested to see what footage it was, whether it's going to be the Foo Fighters, Nirvana, Pink, Madonna, Neil Young was one of them, Sir Paul McCartney. I mean, it was just, I mean, the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up. I'm like, wow, I felt like a rock star arriving to a pre-show. Like fan fiesta, whatever the hell that is. But it was a really, really enjoyable time because of all the paraphernalia that was located around the hotel, strategically placed, was amazing. It was really into it. You could be waiting for your elevator on your floor. We stayed on the 24th floor, and it was great information. Frank Sinatra, huge floor-to-ceiling picture of Frank Sinatra and some information about how his manager used to audition screaming fans, audition screaming fans. I'm like, okay, read between the lines there. What a great fun job. It even happened back then too, huh? Of course it did. Anyway, the Hard Rock Hotel was amazing. Aesthetically, just really, really pleasing. And if this sounds like a commercial, it sounds like a goddamn commercial because I'm just giving you my testimonial. Because you know what? If you're into music, you should experience this. And I'm just actually surprised that they have come to Atlantic City like 10 years too late. Atlantic City still needs a lot of saving. I was reading when I was there because I was kind of just blown away by the elegance and just the overall entertainment value of the hotel, that the Borgata, which is the number one grossing hotel in Atlantic City, in the gambling aspect, brings in over $9 million a year. Now, this hotel, the Hard Rock Hotel, is only 4 or 5 months old. So their numbers aren't in yet, or they're very well, they're pacing probably, I don't know if it's on par, but you would think so because there's 2,000 rooms. But the point is, though, you have Borgata, which is the newer hotel at over $9 million a year. Then it goes way down to $4 million, and then $3 million, $2 million, and $1 million, I think, for like the, what's that name of the hotel? Some of these hotels and casinos are so dated. I'm like, oh my God, they're still in business? I'm driving down the strip. I'm like, well, this is crazy. I haven't heard of advertising or seen their name written in years or a decade or so. But I hope they make it. Atlantic City is such a phenomenal town. It's right on the beach. This hotel, the Rock, Hard Rock Cafe. Hard Rock Cafe is actually the restaurant inside of it. There's great restaurants, high-end restaurants. We didn't go to any of them because we have two kids. Why waste our money? After, you know, you order a nice dinner and you're only through your appetizer and the kid's like, I want to go. I'm like, I just ordered a $40 steak or something. I want to go. No, we're not going. You need to hang out. So we just kept it kind of chill and just went to the cafe. But the concerts there, I mean, really I'd say A-minus acts to A-plus acts. So if you're interested and you live in the tri-state area or you're in an area where they have a Hard Rock Hotel, I highly recommend it because they're doing some great things. And especially, it's just a good excuse, another excuse just to get away, right? Thanksgiving, hard to believe. A week from today, we're going to be carving a turkey. Oh, my God. I still can't believe Labor Day has passed. Man, I'm in total denial. But I'm not in denial about our chief commander-in-chief. Man, it just does not stop what he does or does not do. His character, his ability to keeping people irritable and angry. Oh my God. Last week, I know you know this, but in France, I can't believe when he was there for the 100th anniversary of WW1 that his helicopter had conditions that they couldn't fly in it. Understandable, those things happen. But get in a car and drive 2 hours and make it to the event. That's why you're in Europe. That's why you're in France. Make it work. And so he got lambasted for that, rightfully so. And the thing that really, I couldn't imagine being another world leader, meeting Trump, shaking his hand and thinking, what is this asshole going to type about me, tweet about me, say about me in the next hour, two, 3, or 4 days? It's just, I would almost be against meeting him because you know whatever he says and does is going to be turned completely backwards and upside down by the commander-in-chief when he gets on Twitter. I think what they did at the White House last week to the reporter was totally unacceptable, unprofessional on every level. And I'm glad that CNN is suing to get their or in court. I'm not sure it's actually suing. Excuse me, because of the removal of their credentials. That's not the protocol. It can't happen like that. And in an era, not an era, in a right, a freedom of speech, in the White House, this occurs. In the White House, in the United States of America, people are being stripped of their press pass for the White House. Are you kidding me? Is that how you think you're going to silence a reporter? You're just fueling the fire. I just don't understand this president on any level whatsoever. No, that's not entirely true. The one thing I do understand is that it is all about him. And once you understand it's all about him, everything else is crystal clear, except for the fact that you can't believe how he executes certain things and talks about people so boldly and brashly and so many other things. But I think that once you understand what you do, that it's all about him, then everything else kind of makes sense in terms of policies, executions, role-playing, firings, hirings, unqualified, complete cronyism, favorism, scared of me, votes for me, you name it. It's just so abundantly apparent how one-sided this is. As a matter of fact, I just heard something this morning about there's a woman who is, she's not a senator. Is she a representative? She's about 82 years old, African-American, extremely outspoken. I love her. She's great. And I don't know much more about her. I've just heard clips about her in the last couple of weeks. But if you guys are in the other room know who I'm talking about, please let me know. Chime in. talking about our crew here at PRN. But anyway, Trump said something about that she sounds ignorant, and it's being interpreted as a racist comment because she's African American, and she speaks very freely. And you know what? Good for her, because many things need to be communicated loudly and vocally, whether it's in the House or the Senate, because things have to be heard and it needs to be executed. So he continues to just befuddle. I can't even say amuse, because, you know, it's not funny. But the thing that really, really is deplorable is that we're going to have 2 more years of this complete buffoonery. 2 more years of an election that's going to probably start ramping up after the new year. 2 more years. Anyway, I was speaking to a friend the other day, and he's a really good guy. And I feel horrible for him because he's going through a bout of depression. And we only became friends a couple years ago. We're not close friends, but we talk every couple months. Lives kind of near me and in a different world in terms of professions, but went to the same college and just a great guy. And I was speaking to him a couple months ago. He took a new job. Things were looking up. And then the job isn't doing too well for a number of reasons that are out of his control. And he's back into a state of depression. And, you know, that can happen to anybody. And I believe he's taking medication, and hopefully it's going to be working for him. But the thing that I want to communicate to you is that if you're with somebody for, you know, the long run, whether you're married or not, but it's a committed relationship. And I totally get this. But some people I know don't open up candidly, completely to their mate. And the point at stake here is that he's going through something dark right now, and his girlfriend doesn't have a clue. So I was kind of imploring him to tell her. I said, first of all, you need to, because if she loves you, and she obviously does because I've been with him, she will be with you regardless of whether you have depression or not. I mean, if she doesn't, then you don't want to be with that person. You want to be with somebody who loves you regardless of X, Y, or Z. And I mean, actually, after I met my wife, when we were dating for 3 or 4 months, and I had a kind of a big, I can't say anxiety attack, but the anxiety kind of descended upon me, and I was like, oh boy, here we go, because I wasn't on medication. So I had to come clean with her, and I told her right then, hey, this is who I am, and this is what happens. So, you know, I totally have it under control, but I thought, you know, I didn't need to be on medication, et cetera, but, you know, she was like, hey, listen, I'm with you. I love you. This is who you are. Who cares? So that's been great. So I just want to make sure that you're listening, each and every one of you. If there's something that you feel embarrassed about, you feel that is a weak characteristic of you, or whatever the situation may be, and you're hiding it from the person who is, you know, most important to you in your life because you're worried about being poorly judged or maybe perceived as weak or just embarrassed about whatever the situation is, you have to share it with them. You have to. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your relationship to do that, to be transparent. And believe me, I know it's not easy. It's not easy at all to kind of open up your soul and purge, especially maybe if you've been married for, I don't know, 5, 8, 10, 15 years, and maybe your roles are defined and things are just a certain way. But hey, things happen in life. You have midlife crisis. You have people have affairs. People fall out of love. You name it. And there's so many different variables. But when it comes down to your mental health, don't keep it to yourself. Don't say to yourself these words like, I don't want to worry that person, or they have enough on their plate, or any other cliche like that, because no, this is the most important, significant aspect is your health and well-being. If you're in a relationship, I told this person the other day, if you're in a relationship, this person may even get mad at you for not telling them, for withholding such something so vital, so awe-consuming. And maybe she's like, you know, why isn't this person more attentive? Why they feel like they're aloof, or, you know, so this could fill in a lot of the blanks for someone else. Because, you know, we all think like sometimes we can hide things from, you know, people we're with, whether it's feelings, you know, who knows, it runs the gamut. But the reality is most of the times we can't. Or if we do, it takes so much effort to hide something that is it really worth it? No. I mean, why? I mean, why would you want to be with somebody? And this isn't a cut on my friend. This is just for everybody. Why would you want to be with someone who you're afraid of, who may judge you? I mean, you're supposed to be with somebody who you lay down your arms, man. You let it all out. Good, bad, ugly, indifferent, whatever the case may be. Sure, they may say, well, I wish this person I was with didn't have X, Y, or Z, or didn't do blah, blah, blah. But this is who you are, and they've chosen you to be with out of, you know, what, the 7-8 billion people on this planet? So I think they're going to give you a chance. I think they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt, and I think they're going to love you regardless of whatever it is. As long as it's something that possibly, maybe if it's something out of your control, whether it's drug use or something, some people can hide that, or opioid use, you name it. But if it's something that's really out of your control, especially whether it's genetics like mental health, would you hide or be embarrassed if you had a high blood pressure and you had to take medication? You wouldn't be embarrassed to tell your person that, right? No, of course not. So this is no different. If you have depression, bipolar, anxiety, panic attacks, any or all of the above. I hope it's not all of the above. Knock on wood for you. But you'll get through it. Don't worry. That you owe it to yourself. And that's all I want to say is that please just, you know, reflect upon that. And I understand it could probably send you in a tizzy, I should say, just thinking about opening up sometimes to a person. But I was speaking to another friend recently. Oh my God, it sounds like a lot of my friends need work. Well, don't we all? Who's in a situation that it seems pretty unhealthy. And his mate, his wife, seems inattentive and very frustrated and keeps throwing in his face their marriage and how not permanent it is, or how it's disposable. Maybe that's the better summing up of it. How it's disposable. And that's not healthy at all. If someone's putting their marriage so cavalierly on the line saying, well, this isn't working out, or if this doesn't work out, so it's, those are paramount issues and something that just, you know, rocks you to the core. And so something so vital and so stable or unstable that should be stable and valued and respected is not working. It rocks your world. So whether it's depression, whether it's a marital situation, you know, you have to be honest with yourself first and foremost. Please, please, please. It's a cliche, man, but life is so goddamn short. And so many things can go awry that we don't have control of. But we do have control of a lot of things that, you know, impact us and people in our lives. So being honest with yourself and being candid with the person that you're with. I mean, if you can't be candid with them, or if you're fearful that they're going to reject you based on you coming forward and coming clean on whether it's mental health or drug addiction or something that you used to do or someone you used to be prior to, then maybe you're not with the right person. And that's a big nut to swallow. That's a big nut to swallow. I totally get it, man. But, you know, go through it in your head. Talk to somebody. Talk to someone in your life that's non-judgmental. If you have the liberty or luxury, I should say, of seeing a therapist, talk to a therapist. Maybe sometimes sitting down with a therapist and inviting that person into the room and saying, hey, listen, I just want to invite you because I want my therapist to meet you because you've been very helpful, yada, yada, yada. Whatever guise you need to do to use to get that person in the room with you. And then if you feel that that's the best platform, then, you know, just say, hey, listen, I wanted you to be here because I want to inform you of blah, blah, blah. And if they love you, then they're not going to care whether it's on a therapist's couch, whether it's in a car at a red light or wherever. Well, you may not want to do it at a red light because, you know, probably not much can transpire in that short amount of time. But do it sooner than later because you're carrying a lot of baggage around, a lot of weight, man, a lot of extra weight, and you don't want to get caught. And just imagine how freer and lighter you'll feel. As a matter of fact, I told my one friend this, who I started this conversation on, in terms about sharing his mental health state with his girlfriend. I'm like, you are going to feel so much better by divulging how you feel to your girlfriend, because it's not about her. It's about you. It's about, you know, something you can't control. You know, it's just your DNA, man. It's just the physiology of your brain, the chemicals being out of balance. You know, if you have a broken leg, put a cast on it. If you sprain your foot, you know, put a cast or whatever, brace or boot on it. If you need glasses, you wear glasses or contacts. You need RK surgery, you get RK surgery. So you got the point, okay? Do yourself a favor. Take care of it. So I have to say that I want you to have an incredible Thanksgiving. Next Thursday, we will not be here. Someone who sounds like me and looks like me will be on the airwaves. But I'm going to take some time and enjoy my meal with my family. Actually, I'm going to be on the radio, another station. But PRN will be live, sort of. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy your time with your family. Talk politics. Don't talk politics. Whatever it takes to get you through the day. And make sure you take seconds. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, corporation, conference, seminar, retreat, whatever the case may be, check out my website, markfarrellmotivation.com. That's M-A-R-K. F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. Email is mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Special thanks to Jesse and Alex for always making me shine here at the Progressive Radio Network. The founder and host of the Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knowles, next. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day.